This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
All right, my friends, we are halfway home on a Thursday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Just chopping it up in here, trying to figure it out. Certainly no experts at all. But man, he's a polarizing guy for such a great, energetic, you know, dude to be on the field. Luis Arraez is polarizing among fans, and I totally understand. I can absolutely see both sides of it, man, for sure. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel. He's the executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor. I think the thing that, you know, Ben Clemens and Fangraphs, they're obviously not going to write about, because I'm not going to say they don't believe in it, because you'd be foolish not to believe in intangibles and things like that. But Luis Arraez, you heard it from guys that when he came over, man, he said it all changed when Arraez got here, that's pretty high. It's pretty high praise.
Tells me he's a pretty elite player.
Yeah. Skip Schumacher, his former manager, said he's the best player I've ever coached. So I take those guys' words with more than a grain of salt. Yeah.
Well, I think one of the issues that people have, there's absolutely value. If you just told me the stat line of a player, career-wise, 323 average, 372 on base percentage, 790 OPS. I mean, there's a lot of value there. He's had a 3.4 WAR season, 4.4, 4.9. This wasn't his best season. Yeah. Obviously, the thumb injury, the knee injury, I think played a part in that. Clearly, he's a player that is valuable and teams would want to have on their rosters. The question is, I think what bothers people who are kind of anti-Luis Arraez, he gets a lot of credit for the batting titles that he wins. And perhaps those are overvalued a little bit. He would be no less valuable if he has zero batting titles. If he had those same numbers and had won no batting titles, because every year someone edged him out for the batting title, wouldn't make him a less of a player. He just gets a lot of attention and praise for winning those batting titles. And I think some people say, well, it's not really that deserved. He's not a vastly better player than guys who don't win batting titles. And so he gets an outsized amount of attention for the level of player that he is, which is a valuable player, but maybe not, you know, at the top of the game type player. Most guys, you know, that aren't at the top of the game don't win batting titles and don't have the amount of, historic, you know, numbers and perspective. Like, oh, first guy who's ever done it 3 years in a row in two different leagues and three different teams. And, you know, you make it sound like he's one of the all-time greats. He's not. He's not one of the all-time great baseball players, but he certainly is a valuable baseball player with an elite skill of putting bat to ball.
Yeah, and I can understand if you're Mike Schilt or A.J. Preller looking at him in a vacuum and saying, yeah, table setter, he's going to get on base 236 times this year. That's what you need, right? I could see that. But if there was a better way to utilize him where he would become better, then yeah, I'm all ears. If he's hitting third or second or sixth or seventh or whatever, wherever you can use him, because again, I do feel like he's valuable. And when he's healthy, he is a delight. He's a delight to watch hit. You don't feel like there's a pitcher that can overmatch him. And the reason that they can't, you know, they can't overmatch him, Benny, is that he never K's. He just never strikes out. I mean, the streak he had with no K's, that is a very valuable skill to have. Yeah, not striking out is brilliant. The ABs that he puts together to lead off a game sometimes helps the guy after him. Those aren't things that are going to show up in an article. I'm not disagreeing with this guy's article, though. Don't get me wrong. It made a hell of a lot of sense to me. And when it really breaks it down, you go, geez, he was negative value in runs scored. It doesn't compute. From a very basic level, if you're getting on base more, you should score more runs, right? That was the whole Moneyball thing. You get on base, you score runs, okay? Well, I don't care if you got a walk. You get on base, you score runs. Wasn't the case for Luis Arraez this year. Batted 66% of the time with nobody on, so didn't really bring a lot of value to the San Diego Padres as he was used.
They definitely got his worst season in the last few years.
Sure.
And again, injuries are probably a part of that, but he usually hits for an even higher average. He usually walks even more. He usually has even more extra base hits. Everything was down for Luis Arraez this year. You know, hopefully there's a bounce back next year. And, you know, it wasn't a bad season by any stretch of the imagination. He won a batting title, but that wasn't the best version of a Luis Arraez that we saw mostly with the San Diego Padres.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, you have to decide what that's worth.
Of course the injury plays a part in that, right? Like, of course. I don't even think it's questionable.
It's funny, though.
We didn't get the best year of Manny Machado because he was hurt for half the season.
It's funny, though, because he hit better in the second half of the season. Luis Arraez did.
He got to a really bad start with the Marlins this year.
Yeah.
And that was pre-injury, supposedly.
Despite the thumb. So the first half, he was 310, 720 OPS. 321, 769 OPS in the second half. No idea why. Right? He hit 318 with a 744 OPS as a Padre in exactly 500 at-bats. But in 236 at-bats at Petco, his OPS was 620. I think that feels like an anomaly to me. I don't feel like Petco is the wrong park for him to hit at. I still feel like it's a good park for him to be, you know, in this lineup at. And I do feel like he's a very valuable member of the team next season.
In Phoenix doesn't make him a power hitter all of a sudden.
No, he's still the same type of hitter. He's never going to slug, man. And that, when I see people comparing him, well, listen, look what Aaron Judge did. And look what Shohei Ohtani did. And look what Fernando Tatis did. And look, they're different players. They're completely different players with completely different skill sets. Like, Luis Arraez is never going to hit 56 home runs. But Aaron Judge is probably never going to hit 350. You know, like, that's never going to happen. So it's a little bit apples and oranges. You know, they're both fruit, right? They're both fruit, but they're a little bit different. And I think you have to compare them as such. His comp right now is Stephen Kwan. I don't know if you guys have been watching much of the Yankees Guardian series. He's another guy that I could watch hit all day long. Lefty, righty, up, down, in, out, doesn't matter. He also throws in some gold glove defense as well, making him a little bit more valuable than Luis Arraez. But I don't know, man. I think there's definitely a fit for him next year. Is he potentially a trade chip? Yeah, I think he probably is a trade chip as well. I wonder what you could get for him, but I would be bummed to see him go.
One of the, I think, real mysteries of Luis Arraez is he actually defies a lot of what we know about baseball. When he actually hits the ball well, like, he barrels it up and pulls it,
it's like the worst.
He almost always gets out. You know, he hits those deep. He hit a lot of them in the playoffs.
He did.
He ripped balls into, you know, deep right field at Dodger Stadium, right into someone's glove. When he missed it and hit a little, you know, dinker off the end of the bat, yeah, it flowed in for a base hit. I mean, the guy, you know, makes contact, gets a lot of those bloop hits. But his good hits don't probably result in hits, singles, extra bases as often as other players do because his bat speed is so low. You know, he's got the lowest bat speed in all of baseball. So when he connects and does it well, the results tend to be worse than for other players when they connect the ball well. When Aaron Judge barrels a ball with his bat speed with any launch angle, it goes out of the yard. That's not the case with Luis Arraez. He doesn't swing hard enough to do that. So, you know, really his barrel rate is very irrelevant because a barrel is not particularly advantageous for Luis Arraez.
Yeah, no question. And there's a lot in the chat. No one's disagreeing with any of your takes here. Like Nail says, he's just a one-dimensional player. What he does really well is hit singles. Outside of that, not much doing. Agreed. How can you best utilize a guy that just hits singles, though? Can you utilize him better than just putting him at the top of your order? He doesn't have speed. He's not going to steal bags. Doesn't play great defense in the playoffs randomly. But it's not something I think you can count on at first or second for 162. But yeah, if another team wants a Luis Arraez, I wonder what you could get for him.
I mean, I would love a lineup where he is like your 7 or 8 hitter.
Right.
Where he has a chance to drive in some runs.
Or get on.
But also has a chance to get on for your top of the order guys, who presumably would be like Tatis as your number one guy with, you know, Arraez, you know, in those big long innings where you've scored a couple and you still have two runners on with two outs. And I'd love Luis Arraez to come up in those situations, but I'd also like him to get on. I mean, I think he'd be very valuable as like a seven hitter next season for the Padres.
No
Would
question.
They ever do that? I don't know.
I don't know either. It's that again. I think maybe he's misused a little bit, but
plus people will say, well, you can't pay your seven hitter $15 million. You know, you've got to save your big money for the guys that you want at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, it's an interesting guy, man. Hassan, our buddy Mike says Petco is the wrong park for him. Is it? I mean, here's some numbers he put out. Try to discern this. One season here, five ABs. Yeah, maybe. Maybe it is. But I feel like you could hit if you're just,
I don't even know what kind of park Petco is anymore. It gave him most home runs ever this year.
That's true.
You know, it's obviously not Coors Field or Arizona, but it's also not Comerica Park anymore either. What kind of park is Petco Park at this point, and who is an ideal hitter for Petco Park? I'm not even sure what the answer to that question is anymore.
That's a decent research project this offseason. Who are the best hitters in Petco Park? What's the best model for what we have here? You would imagine a guy like Fernando Tatis Jr. is probably your mold for that, but you know,
it's not like he's a bad hitter in other parks either.
That's correct.
He's also the best hitter for Dodger Stadium, apparently.
Yeah.
Absolutely rakes there. And I would say Dodger Stadium is a fairly good comparison for Petco Park as well.
Fairly.
I mean, you got a short porch right down the line in right. You've got the same kind of coastal sort of, you know,
weather
marine
layer.
A little bit, a little more inland, obviously, for Dodger Stadium. But it's never been a great hitter's park either. So, I'm not even sure what the answer to that question is anymore as to what is the ideal hitter for Petco Park.
Yeah, same.
All right, well, you could not offer him arbitration, but you'd risk losing him. You'd risk offending him, going, oh, you really don't think very highly of me that you don't even offer me arbitration. But if you do, you're going to probably overpay him substantially compared to what he could get with other teams. I think the best situation is find a way to get a long-term deal done that buys out this last year at less, but also guarantees him some stability in a couple of more years at more than he might get. 3 years, 30, 3 years, 33, somewhere around that. I think that is maybe a good compromise for both sides. I don't know if, you know, him and his agent will think, well, we can do better than that. We're not going to sign that. Let's just play our arbitration year and then try to cash in next year in free agency after a better year. That might be his right strategy.
Yeah, could be.
So, you know, it may be a tough deal to be struck between the Padres and Luis Arraez.
Yeah, and you just wonder if another team values him more than the Padres do. He's been on three teams in 3 years. I as far as what he brings to the team and the fit that he is, he's perfect. But I don't know if he's being deployed in the right manner. It certainly didn't seem so based on that article.
Correct.
It was pretty eye-opening.
All right, interesting stuff. We will talk to Eno Saris coming up at the bottom of the hour. Get his thoughts on the value that Luis Arraez brings, and obviously more on the baseball playoffs as well. All right, let's check traffic. We will come back. I was talking about my conversations with Wale, my coworker at Channel 10. He asked me an interesting question I want to get your opinion on as well. We'll get to that coming up after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. I had a very frustrating conversation with my coworker last night. And it's not his fault. I totally understand where he was coming from. But we had the baseball game on, and Shohei Ohtani's coming up, and he goes, you know, and he's trying to get more into baseball. This is Wale. And I understand his question. Coming from a football and basketball fan's perspective, he goes, so who's the greatest baseball player of all time? And I go, that's a really tough question in baseball. You know, for a long time, people thought it was Babe Ruth. Now, you know, some people are saying could be Shohei Ohtani with everything he does. Well, how many titles does he want? I go, this is the first time he's ever even been in the playoffs. And Wally goes, how could he possibly be the greatest player of all time if he's never even won a title? And I go, it's not basketball, man. You cannot carry your team to a title in baseball. Winning championships is, it's not irrelevant, but it certainly is not anywhere near as valuable in the discussion as whether, you know, how many championships Tom Brady has won in football or Michael Jordan has won in basketball. That is absolutely the first thing you mention when you talk about the GOATs of those sports. Yep. Whose team has won the most championships? barely even relevant in baseball in the discussion of who is the best player of all time. And while
Barry
I just
Bonds,
could,
no championships.
While I just
Tony
could not
Gwynn, no championships.
Grasp necessarily like that Trout. You could be the King greatest Jr., player no in a sport and not even sniff a championship. And I go, that's baseball. It's just different. So in your mind, like how championships, how valuable are they in terms of individual legacies in sports?
It goes both,
in baseball.
It goes both ways, though, because you have players that are severely overrated, like Derek Jeter, right? Derek Jeter,
he's the one baseball player who gets more credit for his championships than anything else.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And what he was able to do in October, right? He was one of those guys that you could count on in October, but in the course of 162, solid. Hell yeah, solid. You love to have
All-star.
That All-star, you love to have that guy on your team, certainly. But when it came to October, he was kind of a different animal. He would hit for power, like weird home runs, you know, and obviously some fan-aided home runs as well. But he would definitely define his career, guys, on his rings. He would hold them up and say, I got four of these bad boys. I do think I agree with you. I mean, I think about the best baseball players of all time, and certainly of our generation. I feel like some of the best ones, as you just mentioned, didn't even win one. You know, Mike Trout is one of the best I've ever seen. He's never going to win one. You know, he's going to go to his grave never winning a championship, really only getting one shot at the postseason, which that's not necessarily his
fault.
Barry
Bonds only made it to one World Series. Right. You take like Barry Bonds, Ken Griffey Jr., Mike Trout, I don't remember how many games that series went, but six World Series games amongst all three of them?
Yeah, so Wally asked me, so how many did A-Rod win? And I go, one. And he goes, so Jeter was the better player. I go, no. No. Anyone who knows baseball would tell you that on an individual basis, A-Rod was vastly superior in talent. Just about every skill that you can have in baseball, A-Rod was better than Jeter in baseball.
Except in October. I mean, they really will judge your whole career on the tournament that you play at the end of the year, which, again, I don't really have a problem with. I mean, I really don't have... Like, Luis Soho was a postseason legend. You're seeing Kike Hernandez. Postseason legend.
And I saw someone make a great comparison. So how do you compare it to basketball? And they said, Kike Hernandez is like Robert Ory.
Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah, he's got five or something.
He got, you know... I mean, like Robert Ory won a bunch of rings, but he also was clutch. He made huge shots in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's like he was riding the pine.
He wasn't an all-star, was never going to be an all-star player, but, you know, he was a huge contributor
Steve
in the
Kerr.
Postseason. Steve Kerr was
a role player, but he's got
massive
he's
shots.
Putting rings on his toes now.
Massive shots in his career. Yeah, massive shots. So I think baseball has the ability to recognize a great player that may have been in a bad organization, a bad team. You know, you see it all the time. Football players, great. Think about all the great quarterbacks that probably just ended up in the wrong organization. And they could have been potentially the next Tom Brady. They could have been the next whoever.
Where does Aaron Rodgers land? One Super Bowl title.
He's one of the best. He's certainly one of the best of his generation.
I mean, he's kind of like the A-Rod of football. You know, definitely one of the most talented players ever of his generation.
But like Eli Manning's got two rings. Only win the Is one he better time. Than Aaron Rodgers? I don't think anyone's going to make that argument.
I do think baseball will delineate sometimes, and they'll say, "Oh, that guy's a like postseason legend," like David Wells. You know, there's guys that have like really done it on the big stage, and those guys are kind of singled out.
I mean, is Madison Bumgarner one of the greatest pitchers of all time? Certainly in the postseason.
In October, bro.
Yeah.
In October. He is, I mean, he doesn't pay for a beer in San Francisco ever, nor should he. I mean, he was next level, man. But yeah, I think, you know, very few players get it all. You know, very few players get it all. The really, like, Jeter's... I say overrated player, but like Joey pointed out, he had 3,000 hits. 3,000 hits is no joke. It's no joke. Like, that's a really fancy club to be in.
And but he's talked about as if he had 5,000 hits.
It's exactly
sometimes.
Right. Or 350, 400 home runs, right? Oh. Like, but that wasn't his game. But the four rings is what he sleeps well at night knowing, I was the captain of this team that delivered four rings. Hell yeah. And who doesn't want that legacy? Which one would you take? Would you rather have the Mike Trout or would you rather have the Derek Jeter? I'll take the Jeter all day.
Yep.
Captain of the team that won four rings, and I played very well in all of those World Series. Like, done. It's a no-brainer.
Even me, and I, you know, we disagree a lot. I'd take the Jeter career
all
too.
Day, yeah. All day. Then the Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah,
or the Mike Trout in a heartbeat.
I don't know if there's
Barry
any
Bonds.
I don't know if there's
That's
any career. I think I'd rather have Derek Jeter's career over almost anyone
in
baseball.
3,000 hits.
No one's ever called Derek Jeter the GOAT, though.
No, not even close.
No,
not even
not
close.
Even close.
Wasn't even the best player of his generation. Wasn't even close.
No.
But
not
I might
the best
take
shortstop
his,
on his team.
I might take his career over anybody else's.
And see, now that one's. Now, but you would rather have Magic Johnson's than Robert Horry's.
Yeah.
Right?
But
so,
Magic
like,
has his rings.
He's
too,
got his rings. Know. You'd rather have. Who's a good comp?
Let's see. Who would be a good comp in terms of not winning a ton of championships?
Kevin Durant's got what, one?
Two?
Do you have two?
Maybe two.
Just the one with the Warriors.
The one with the Warriors.
Just the one with the Warriors.
You want Durant's career or you want Robert Horry's?
He's another Aaron Rodgers type.
You want Durant? Yeah, he's pretty good. Pretty dominant. One of the five best in his era.
I think, because in baseball, we're talking to guys that never won one versus Jeter who won four. I get the sense that once you get the one, I don't want to say the rest are gravy, but like you got yours. You
it's
got to
be the
one.
Most elite feeling in the world, you know, like the most like.
So if Kevin Durant had not won any, I bet he'd be like, "I just want to.
I just want one.
Just
I'll
want
go anywhere. I'll do
but
anything."
He's got his one. Yeah, one versus four.
Klug,
huge difference.
Klug makes a good point. The Braves guys, all those guys, they got one.
Maddux,
Glavin, Smoltz,
Chipper Jones,
one. You want their careers, or do you end those dominant runs, or do you want that? You want those four? You know, I take the four. He may be my number one career to have, really. Plus, you know, we've all seen the
Buster Posey's kind of an interesting argument there.
He's got two.
He's got two of the three
two,
that they
I think
won.
He's got two. Of the three.
Maybe he got all three.
Get all three.
Maybe got all three.
I can't remember if he got all three, but I think he got all three.
Ted Williams, great comp. Do you want Ted Williams' career? You're literally regarded as maybe the best to ever do it. You never got a ring.
Yeah,
sucks,
that's a good one,
man.
Yeah.
Sucks. Posey's got
three. He's got an MVP, 7-time All-Star. That's a damn good,
damn
career.
Fine career. And now he's the president of baseball ops for the Giants.
Rookie of the year. I mean,
that's pretty
Gold
good.
Glover.
Yeah, that's a good
5-time Silver Slugger.
Yeah. That's good.
That's a really good career.
That's a great career.
That's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
It's going to be.
All right. Eno Saris is going to join us, our Smart Baseball Weekly segment. We'll ask him about his thoughts on the value of Luis Arraez, maybe the pitching market as well that we were discussing earlier. That is coming up next year with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. I don't know if Eno Saris knows exactly what he has stumbled into with our Luis Arraez conversation this morning.
We've had it with him before.
A little bit, for sure. But now it's now it's kind of becoming decision time for the San Diego Padres. Pauly says we should just get into it. So if you would, Pauly.
It's time for the super polished, just to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark, by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Well, good morning to you, Eno. And, so we're talking, as we have a lot this year, about what value Luis Arraez really brings to a team. Woodsy was reading a piece that said he's actually, negative runs added to the team's offense during the year. And I think the question is, with arbitration now, a number that's looking like, $14 to $15 million, with the Padres, should they even be offering him arbitration? Should they be trying to buy that out at a lower number? Is that a risk? I mean, where do you kind of land on the whole Luis Arraez value debate at this point?
I mean, I think anybody who's watched him all year knows there's flaws. You know, like, he doesn't run the base as well. He's not a good defender. And the power is non-existent. So it's really kind of a one note, thing, which is he's better at that one thing than anybody else in baseball. So it's a really strange grouping of skills where, something he does better than anybody else. And then everything else, he's almost worse than anybody else. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's like a DH that can hit singles a ton. So, it's a really difficult thing to put together, but I would say that, if you didn't need the money desperately somewhere else, it would still be worth it, because what we saw was a down year for him offensively. What you would project for him next year is a little bit more power. He hit four homers this year. You would project more like 7 to 10. and you project a little bit more on base. And so if you do that, and you project a little bit of a bounce back defensively, because he had the worst defensive numbers of his career, you would get a league average player. And a league average player, you know, theoretically should be worth around $20 million. So he should be worth it. But I do think that the article was right to point out that, for example, he maybe shouldn't be batting leadoff.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. How would you deploy? How should he be deployed? And again, all things being equal, he's healthy, the thumb's good, and he's back to Luis Arraez. And you know what I've heard about him too. You know, is he doesn't want a DH. Now, if you had a guy that was like, yeah, I'll DH, I'm fine. He doesn't want to. He wants to play the field, and he thinks it helps
him.
Yeah,
you gotta listen to that.
Yeah, and yeah. You have to listen to that. You do. And I sit here and say, well, you're the manager. Tell him what to do. It doesn't work that way. So,
well, you know, one thing that you have with DH in particular is there's a penalty. You're 10% worse than you normally are when you're on the bench, and so. You know, if you take 10% off the top of Luis Arraez, you kind of get what you got this year.
Yeah.
And so you would just, then it might not be worth it, because he wouldn't be giving you any defensive value. He might just be a one win player for the year. And that'd be a little bit of an overpay. But people would, you know, if people were offered Luis Arraez for 1 year and $14 million, I think most people would take it. You know, that's what I'm trying to say. It's like, you know, it's a decent deal for 1 year, even if you wouldn't give him, say, 3 and 45. You know what I mean? I think one of the problems is just the sort of general crunch. In terms of how I'd use him, a single is not worth as much if nobody's on base. I think that should make
sense. Oh, yeah, 100%.
Then it's the same as a walk. You know, a single is better than a walk if there are people on base. And so I would maybe bat him fourth or fifth, because he'd be coming up behind the guys who get on base and who slug. And so, you know, you'd love to have him come up with a guy on third with less than two outs. Oh,
all day, man. All day. Yeah. You feel like that's money in the bank with Luis Arraez.
Right. So he definitely has, like, the Padres this year had the best strikeout rate in baseball. And for much of the year, him and Merrill, you know, were so good at making contact that they were a great foil for Machado and Tatis, who hit for power and strike out a little bit more. So I think that it was good. It was good lineup construction. I know how it ended, but just because of those two or three games, I wouldn't ignore the whole season. And so if I had the money, I'd bring him back. But, you know, one thing that I have seen when I look at the payroll, you know, pages for the Padres is, they're really close to that luxury tax number.
Yeah.
Over at Fangraphs, they put in the arbitration numbers for everybody, and they have them at 231, and the luxury tax threshold is 237.
Good
and
Lord.
That's without adding a single person. So if you have $6 million, that is with Arraez. But if you have $6 million to replace Tanner Scott, Kyle Higashioka, Jerickson Profar, David Peralta.
Solano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Solano.
That sounds rad. Awesome. Eno, great to talk to you, and we'll talk to you next year. No, I'm just kidding. No,
there's something I have to give. Maybe you can get Kyle Higashioka for like $3 or $4 million. Maybe because he's older and, you know, I don't know what the rest of the league thinks of him. But Profar is not coming back for $1 million again.
No.
And so you could say, okay, we don't need Profar. We'll just do, we'll bring David Peralta back for about $1 million. You could probably do that, you know, Peralta and Solano for $1.5 million. You could probably just re-rack that. But one thing that happens is corner outfielders like Peralta, Solano, and Profar, there's going to be somebody at the bottom of the market at the end of the season, at the end of the off season, that'll be there that'll sign for little, just like Peralta and Solano, if it's not exactly Peralta and Solano. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. I do think backup catcher
catcher.
Don't think Capistrano is a starter. That's the biggest need, and it's a difficult one to solve with less than $5 million.
Talking to Eno Saris here, our weekly Smart Baseball segment, and is there any, you know, metric explanation for Shohei Ohtani's postseason, 17 for 20, runners on base, scoring position, 0 for whatever, with the bases empty? I mean, is there anything there, Eno, that we can make sense of?
There is something weird, actually. He's much more selective with runners on base. If you look at how many times he swings the pitches outside the zone, he does it a lot more when the bases are empty. So the way I kind of see it is with runners on base, he's actually not thinking about homering as much. You know, with runners on base, he's like, you know, a walk crowds these bases. You know, a single or double might score somebody. Like, I want to bear down and make sure that I kind of score this runner or advance him, you know. But with nobody on base, he kind of swings for the fences a little bit. And so I think that could be a little bit of a process distinction. I don't know if it would hold up over, you know, a full year or whatever, but that's what I'm seeing right now.
Definitely is the old, you know, Shohei, you could just pretend there are runners on base when you go up there. You know, you could just imagine they're out there and then have that mindset every time you go to the plate.
Mets are cooked, yeah. Right? You know, they're cooked.
I mean, the one nice thing about the Mets is that their lineup, you know, in terms of going into the season, through the season, their lineup is one of the better ones in the postseason. And so usually that leads to something. But the weird kind of 8-0 games makes you wonder, you know, another thing that Dave Roberts has done. So the more times you see a reliever over the course of one series, it's a little bit like the third time through order with a starter. You hit the reliever better the third time you see him. And the one thing that bothers me about where this series is for the Mets right now is, you know, somebody like Lindor has not seen, you know, has not seen the relievers multiple times.
Right.
You know, most of these guys have not seen, because when you win a game 8-0, you can put in guys that you're not going to use in the 2-1 game.
Sure.
So, you know, Evan Phillips, you know, Michael Kopech was used in a certain part of the order. He can be used in a different part of the order next time. So I think Dave Roberts is managing the team well, and it doesn't look good for them, though.
No, he's pushed all the right buttons, certainly, and has a plan and stuck to it. And you know, it's the guys are executing. And I, you know, I'm looking at some of the guys in their bullpen going, yeah, I don't know. You could see Blake Treinen 15 times. I don't know that anybody's getting anything off of what he's throwing, you know, right now.
I mean, Kopech
too. He's sure. Just yeah. Outstanding yeah. And incredible. Incredible. So I, you know, if I'm Roberts, I'm like, yeah, you saw him yesterday, but I'll take my chances with the stuff, just the pure stuff. It's gotta elate you watching what Treinen and Kopech have done, stuff plus wise and all that.
Oh yeah, they're great. Kopech has one of the best increases. When he went to the pen, his fastball increased. The only person whose fastball increased year over year more in stuff plus is Luke Weaver when he went to the pen.
Yeah.
So. You know, it's a perfect role for him too, because he has no command, and you know, so he just kind of throws it hard. But one thing that it does speak in the Mets' favor, if they can just get into that bullpen more, the Mets were like the third best team in baseball against relievers this year. They were not as good against starters, but they were great against relievers. So if they can just battle their way into that reliever core, and if you think about the starters that the Dodgers have. You know, there's not really one starter that you think, oh, this guy's going to throw 7 or something, you know?
Yeah, so they're pitching
they're
well,
get into
but
that
yeah.
Bullpen. I don't think they've done, you know, the Mets are done winning games. I think it's tough to see them winning the whole series, but they're going to win another game or two. So,
speaking of pitching, you know, we were discussing earlier what the Padres might do beyond their, you know, top three in their rotation next year with Joe Musgrove out. And as you said, they're close to the luxury tax. Let's say they're willing to go over it. You know, they reset the penalties. They might be able to spend on a starting pitcher. There's a lot in the free agent market that's available. Who would you think is going to be someone that could be targeted? Not necessarily, you know, Corbin Burns, Blake Snell, top of the market, but guys who could be available on a 1-year deal or 1-year option type deals that the Padres could target to fill that Joe Musgrove spot in their rotation this offseason.
I mean, one of my favorites is Nick Pivetta from the Red Sox, but I think he might take a little more than 1 year.
Yep.
I'm trying to call up a page here of free agents. I don't have an answer right off.
I mean, there's Merrill Kelly, Alex Cobb, Nick Martinez,
yeah.
Kyle Gibson.
I actually like Cobb. I actually like Cobb.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't think he'll be as injured this year. You know, this year, was his first year back off of hip surgery, you know, and it wasn't his best, then that will make him like literally a one-year guy, I think, because he'll be looking for a pillow contract. And he has a great sinker-splitter combo, and, you know, sometimes uses a cutter and sweeper, and I think Ruben Niebla will coax those out of him. So I like Alex Cobb a lot in a one-year deal.
Do you think that there's any value left in a one-year deal for a Max Scherzer or a Justin Verlander at this point, you know, for a team that's trying to win next year?
I do. I mean, you're just hoping for, you know, a little bit of a random, like, good year in terms of health. One thing that I worry about with both of those guys is they could be guys that get you to the postseason, but not ones that you want to pitch too hard in the postseason. I mean, we're seeing that there's a line where it's like, you know, Martin Perez is perfectly fine during the regular season when you need to rack up wins and, you know, and you need to pitch day to day. But in the postseason, did he pitch once?
No.
No. Yeah. So, you know, you just, like, Verlander was left off the playoff roster for Houston. That was eye-opening. So I think, you know, I think I prefer, which one do I prefer? I think I prefer Verlander. And you just hope that he, you know, has a better year health-wise, feels better. But I think there's something left in both those arms.
Interesting stuff. You know, obviously we got the World Series coming up, and we'll see if it's the Dodgers Yankees matchup that I'm sure Rob Manfred and his office would salivate over, or if the Mets and Guardians yeah. can come up with a surprise here.
Yeah, you know, one thing that as I've been watching this is I'm a little annoyed at the announcers.
Yes.
I don't think
talking to the right show.
You're talking to the right show, buddy.
I mean, and do you remember like how, I mean, it was fun to see Mudcat and Don like sitting in the stands. That was fun,
yeah.
But it would have been nicer to hear them. You know, one thing that I was suggesting that I thought was doable, because I don't know about the financials. You know, I don't know if the demand is there, you know, to pay for, you know, more announcers and alternate casts. You know, there is a nerd cast coming for one of these games. I don't know if the money's there. One thing that they could do is on MLB TV, when you get the postseason package, there's audio for every game, and that audio is, you know, like Jesse Agler. It's the local radio crew for each team. And I just wish there could be a button.
Sync it.
Where it was
like Apple TV.
I want to watch this game with that radio overlaid as the audio.
It's pretty simple. I mean, you take all the games off of TBS and everything, and Apple TV is your new postseason home for baseball, and they'll spend a ton of money to do it. Their broadcast is spectacular, and you can sync it with ease to the local radio guys. But yeah, it's been rough. I mean, John Smoltz, he never stops talking. There's never a moment where he stops.
Let the game breathe.
Explaining everything, every single thing, which...
And he's like, he's wrong about stuff.
And he's
like,
wrong about stuff, yeah.
Like, he was talking about one knee down, which is the way the catchers...
We talked about that yesterday, yeah.
And he was like, yeah, wild pitches and pass balls are up because of one knee down. You're like, well, actually, it's the opposite. They're down. Like, you could just have fact-checked that before you just said it on the air, you know?
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a tough putt watching those guys.
He has this idea that like third time through the order didn't exist when he played,
right?
And it only exists now, and you know, that's also, you can fact check that. No, third time through the order has been there for all of baseball's history.
They just didn't talk about it as much.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Eno, appreciate it. Yeah, have a good week. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Eno Saris, weekly segment, still brought to you by 7 Mile Casino throughout the postseason. Paul, we have time. We'll do a quick traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. I know Eno panicked everybody with the Padres' projected luxury tax number. I was going to say the same thing. Woods, you mentioned it during the traffic report. I did look it up, though. If you look at the other site, SpotTrack, they're not $6 million under. They're $2 million over already.
Oh, cool. Okay. I thought I looked at that yesterday. What was I looking at?
They're projected at $243 million with their luxury tax number for 2025. $241 is the projected threshold. So that would be over already.
Old Haas grabbing 13 of that, didn't he?
One more year. Absolutely.
Very cool, man. Very. I hope your podcast
is going well. You can't fill all of your holes
well.
Even with $13 million, though, nowadays. So Now, their actual payroll is quite a bit less, but it's because it's the average value of still guys who are going to be making more in the future. Makes it hard to do long-term contract extensions, though, because you're going to blow way past the tax. We'll talk about that more. Pauly's got some headlines in the Roundel Report next year on 97.3 The Fan.